Today, Louis, I'd like to talk about healing and remembrance. And I know that when we talk about healing, that is a totally different experience and set of ceremonies and cultural practices than what settlers experience. So it's going to be quite a broad topic, but also a very difficult topic.
Well, I find it a difficult topic. It's accepting the truth, and I think in our society nowadays that it's hard to accept the truth, you know, and people deny it for a long time. And until, you know, the residential school, you know, people didn't realize what effect it had on our people. So now the truth is really coming out. Mm-hmm. It took them a long time to accept the truth.
Yeah.
And the devastation to our people. And it was, you know, there's a lot of implications with it, like breaking of the family unit, the parenting, the growing up with family. That is part of it now, and the rippling effect to the since it opened. So people didn't understand that. Mm-hmm. You know, because they were already used to their way of living, and to accept something of not seeing your kids for just about a year. So this is something that we don't really think about.
Yeah, we're not thinking about healing the family unit as much as when, you know, I think when settlers think about healing, we think about medical, you know, solutions, right?
Yeah, finding a cure for cancer or...
Yeah. Exactly. But for Indigenous people, healing is on every level.
Well, that's a part, I think, that I think that's part of the consequences of understanding the truth and reconciliation. It's going to be a lot of work because I'm a product of it, you know, and just about all the reserves right across Canada have that problem, mm-hmm. intergenerational healing. It's going to take some time, but, you know, there's hope. We're still here, and I think that we have to start coping with it and understanding the consequences of the residential school and what was done to us. Mm-hmm. Not only the residential school, you know, it's other factors that come into it.
Yeah. Well, everything in the Indian Act, which is the most bizarre document ever to be sanctioned by a government, was set out to oppress and eliminate Indigenous people. So yeah. I can't even imagine the barriers faced. I mean, over the last 150 years has been, you know, what's seemingly insurmountable, but you're right. You're still here. You're working at healing and reclaiming. And that's what I want to talk about today is ways that that happens in the Sahuapmik community, or specifically the Switsmalf community, because I know that Sahuapmik is a huge territory and there's lots of different ways, you know, lots of different cultural ways throughout the whole region. And I know, for instance, that you just had a sweat and you're feeling pretty good today.
Well, I don't know about feeling good, but I feel kind of wasted.
That's interesting.
It really took a lot out of me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I think that was the way of our people a long time ago. Because when you look at a sweat house, you know, it's a little mound on the earth. And some people claim it's Mother Earth's womb. Mm. And when you go in there, when you come out again, you're reborn again. A lot of times I feel that way. You know, I go in there with that angry knot in my stomach. And when I come out, it's basically gone. I think I'm too wasted then to really... Yeah, but it does really affect me in a good way. I start looking at things a little bit more differently, and that knot in my stomach's gone. Mm. Like I always talk about, when I grew up, I was an angry young man, and I started going to the sweats, and I start to tell people now I sweat too much because I don't know how to get angry anymore. It's all about my Sahuapmik humor, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, I kid around too much, you know, and because I remember that one time I went to, remember we had some kind of a do at the Song Sparrow? And that one woman kept trying to drag me out there to dance, so I finally broke down. I told her I broke my ankle. So I went out there and I faked the dancing a little bit because I had a broken ankle, and she didn't realize that I had a broken ankle because I was kidding. And she thought I was kidding.
Right, yeah.
A couple of weeks later, she came back and apologized to me. She didn't realize that I did break my ankle. So that's the consequences of kidding around too much sometimes. But you know, it's that humor. It's part of the healing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and understanding that sometimes you go through life with a lot of hurts and pains, and endurance is part of it. And I think that's why it was kind of a lesson to me too, you know, that pain I was feeling in my ankle. It's a pain of my lifetime, understanding how to cope with it and deal with it. Now my leg is still a little bit stiff, but you know, that's what life is all about, you know. We go through rough times and we cope with it. It'll eventually go away somewhat, but it's always there, a little stiffness, just a reminder that, you know, life is never going to treat you good all the time.
Yeah, there's always going to be a reminder of that trauma, yeah, no matter how much healing has happened.
Yeah, so, you know, this is what I think our people had to endure, lots of pain growing up a long time ago, and I think that it's how, because life was probably pretty harsh way back. It wasn't that long ago when our people were still hunting and gathering. You know, you go back to maybe 300 years. So it isn't that long ago when our people were living the hard lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
They spent all their, especially in the interior, the Suwakmuk people, they spent a lot of time out hunting and gathering. Get ready for the long winter months, and you know, it's not like the winters we have now. We're fairly mild.
Mm-hmm.
You get 3-4 feet of snow, cold weather all the time. These are things that we have to endure, I think. But now it's kind of different. It's not like it what it used to be. Now we get a little bit of cold, and we all, too cold now. But, you know, back in the day, it used to get cold for 2-3 weeks at times. You know, have a big cold snap, and,
mm-hmm.
and snow was hard. Ice was deep in the water, rivers and the lakes. See, these are things that our people a long time ago had to endure. Now, I think the lifestyle has changed radically, I think. It's a new way of life. And maybe we're accepting it too much, but, you know, there's always hope, though.
Yeah. And so when you were out on the land in the spring, summer, and fall, gathering food, medicines must have been a part of that, like things for tea that would have been medicine for over the winter.
I remember my grandmother, she wasn't really a medicine person, but, you know, it was, I think she grew up harvesting, you know, fruit and roots and... Even then, in her life, she was pretty well getting assimilated. But she talked about medicines, plants. She said, oh, the medicine people, they went out and gathered. They didn't just go out and gather anyone, any plant. That the medicine person had to go way up in the hillside where there was less human contact to gather it. Because she said anything that had human contact, it wasn't as powerful as the one that was way out in the wilds, you know, where it's something that was taken away from us. Now a lot of people are coming to us and asking us, well, what is medicines are? But you got to remember too that our people didn't have the same diseases that are brought for since contact. I think it was mostly cuts, scrapes, burns, because they had such a healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
They're always out in the land, out in the... And So there's no such thing as colds or flus or...
Right, right.
You know, and so they knew which plant to use.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling a slachaya about one person that got kicked by a horse back in the 1920s or around there. Still when doctors were going out to visit, you know, to see if everything was okay. This one guy got kicked by a horse and gangrene set in on his leg. And the doctor told him, well, there's nothing we could do for you. He said, you got to make your peace with the maker. And two medicine women from Squilex heard about him and they sent for him. And he went over there and apparently they dug a hole in the ground and they put a poultice on his gangrenous leg and they buried him up to his head was shown apparently.
Whoa.
They kept him in there for 4 days. When he came out, he was okay.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. And then he went back home and the doctor came around a few weeks later and he said, oh, what's his name? I can't remember his name, but anyways, is he gone? No, he's outside splitting wood. He went out there and he said, you've seen him walking around. Perfect. And he said, what happened to you? He said, oh, the medicine women in Skylix healed me. He says, what did they put on it? He says, I don't know. They put the poultice on and they buried me in the ground and it got better.
Wow.
So there are some plants that, you know, that our people knew about. And that was taken away because it was supposed to be the work of the devil. Because my grandmother, you know, and I listened to a lot of her tapes, and any time that something controversial come up, say, oh, the priest didn't want us to do that, or, you know. So it was, I think the loss of our medicine was really gone, and the important ones, you know, and the healing processes of it. It's one of those things, you know, that when you think about it, every plant has or people knew every plant that what it was good for. And I was talking to one person, seen a scar on the tree, and she said it was some kind of fungus. And I said, no, it's like a scab. The tree is healing itself, you know, similar to us. If we get a cut or something on our body, scabs over, so it gives it time to heal. And that's what a lot of them are. They're not really fungus or anything. They're a way of the plant healing itself. So people don't realize that, because remember, in our culture, all the plants, the trees, and the fish, everything that's on the land is our self. They're our relatives. And that's the way we're supposed to be treating it. And I'm guilty of it sometimes, you know, because of maybe the way I grew up, you know, that not respecting Mother Earth like I should. You know, I try to help look after her, but it's one of those things that my lifestyle is totally different than the way of the old people. Maybe that's why all I say, Hakayam is Ayapas Yamiya Tamihu. Maybe the land is getting mad because we disrespect her and we don't give back. In our culture, if we break a branch, a simple branch or something, we make an offering, maybe a little prayer, or maybe we got a little tobacco, we spread it out. But it's always trying to give back something in return for what we take. Because in any culture, if you take something without permission, you know, you're gonna eventually pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But these are little things that we don't think about because, you know, we take Mother Earth for granted. And that's what I keep talking about, you know, is that because all our Chiptakula, our creation stories, it talks about that. You keep taking and taking. Somebody's going to pay. Yeah, Wapapa's so quiet to stamp. You know, everything is gone now. Kasoeyam is Sapatayam. To me, you know, we forgot how to look after it, to honor Mother Earth. And I think that's why she's getting mad now. You see worldwide now, the floodings, the slides, the fires, especially the fires in North America, you know. So maybe Yamas Ayap is Yami Atamiu. I said, maybe the land is getting mad. But how do we give back what we've taken? You look at all the, everything is gone. You know, nobody thinks about like the extraction of the minerals, the list goes on and on. But how do we give back what we've taken? I know government's talking about planting 3 billion or 10 billion trees, but are those just the trees that create money?
Right.
How about the other plants that were vital to our ecosystem?
Right, diversity, because that's like that's the health of an environment, is the diversity of species.
And our people relied on the birch trees for their basket making. That was a big part of their life, part of their culture.
Yeah, and birch aren't considered profit trees because they have a short lifespan. And
then where's the water that's going to help them?
Right? Yeah, because there's water birch and paper birch, right? And the water birch is like dying because the wetlands or the sort of in-between lands between lake and mountains are getting drier and drier.
Yeah, all over, you know, getting less and less water. We see, that's another thing we extract, is the water. Then where does it go? It doesn't leave the atmosphere, as far as I know. You know, I don't think they've come up with a study where they said that the water evaporates and it goes out into the universe. So it must stay basically on the planet.
Yeah, it's somewhere.
But where does it go? Maybe it all goes to China or somewhere, India, wherever they're getting the flooding. Maybe that's where they go.
Yeah, it is. It's true. It's somewhere. So speaking of like birch and cedar and things like that, I read once that the making of cedar baskets is a healing process too. Is that something that's in the Swartzmelf community? That, because I know there's quite a few, or there's a number of cedar basket makers in Sohwetmek territory.
Basketry, it's vital, you know, it's like, it's something that we need. It's part of our culture. You know, we need things to store, like we got suitcases and little knickknacks to hold things. And that's what was used with our birch work basket. So I don't know whether it's spiritual, but I think it's just a necessity. You know, we need it, but when they go out and harvest, that's when they say their prayer of thanking the creator for giving it. Because every plant had a use and our people knew what to use it for. So I don't know whether it's a spiritual thing, but I think it's a necessity, just like we got clothes and we got to have a car to drive to get us to work and back. You know, it's part of, I think it's part of that lifestyle that we have, and so basketry was one of the vital things that we needed to store our stuff, to pick our fruit, to, you know, something we needed. So I don't know whether it was spiritual, because maybe we got to pray to the basket god. And
and what about smudging? Is smudging considered medicine?
Yeah, it is a big part of our culture. Smudging, in our Sohwetmek territory here, I remember my grandmother using, but she was using cedar boughs. She dried them and crushed it into a smudge. And because I remember a time there when I grew up with her. You know, and she's the one that taught me how to speak the language. And she looked after my cousins, my uncle Bill's daughters. He had three daughters, and they lost their mother a long time ago. And she raised them when they weren't in residential school. They came home, and naturally, I was always there most of the time when I was growing up, because remember I talked about part of the culture was giving the eldest son to the grandparents. my older brother was given to my dad's side, and I was given to my mother's side. So I spent a lot of time with them. Because them girls always got ghosted. There were a lot of sukhiyams around ghosts. Sometimes they'd be laying on a bed and they'd say, oh, somebody's grabbing my ankle. You know. So I think they were telling ghost stories before, and then they start, and then they'd always come up with something. They'd hear people walking around or something, and the sukhiyam is coming around, you know, the ghost. So my grandmother would bring out the smudge bowl, you know, the cedar, smudge the whole house. And after she was finished, out would come the holy water and splash it around.
Oh, gosh.
And I was thinking, you know, she doubled whammied them ghosts because she had to make sure, because she was deeply religious, you know, she was a real devout Catholic. And a lot of, she retained some of the traditional way, that's why the smudging was used. And the holy water. So I'd say, well, she double whammied the ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So do people, like, is it appropriate for settlers and people who are non-Indigenous to smudge themselves? Like to?
Well, they do it anyway. You go to any mass, you know, they got that little...
Yeah, you're right. I guess yeah. They do, yeah. There's
same
always
thing.
Smudging in all the cultures.
Yeah, so it's similar to it, mm-hmm. You know, so...
And what does it do? Like, what does it...
It cleanses you, your body. And it's supposed to get rid of all the bad stuff that you've accumulated. And, because you got to remember in the movie where my mother was saying that they learned how to lie and things like that at residential school.
In the Fallen Feather, yeah.
Yeah. And, because that's part of it. It's supposed to get rid of
the evil stuff. Amazing how she said that she had to lie and make up sins so that when she went to the confession box, she had something to say.
Yeah, because they feel obligated to tell the truth, but not the truth.
Yeah, so it was a double, like, how awful to do, well, I mean,
yeah,
the awfulness is yeah. So deep in the residential school, but to learn how to lie, to make up lies, like to make up the fact that you lied.
I know, and they tell you that thou shalt not steal. And yet they taught them how to steal, you know, for the hunger.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing apples and
yeah.
Food, stealing icing off a cake.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So it's a convoluted life we live sometimes.
Oh, yeah. So when people are sick or have, you know, any other kinds of trauma that they want help healing... Does Sahuatmic culture have like healing circles or healing rituals of any kind where people can gather and help someone?
Yeah, I think that spirituality was taken away from our people. Even I don't know what it is. And I always strongly believe that sweating is a big part of it. When you go to a sweat, you keep trying to get a guardian spirit, whether it's a deer or bear or plant or whatever. Anytime you're in trouble, you call for your guardian spirit, your sna'a, to come and help you. So this is what it's all about. And that's what I think is part of the spirituality, you know, a big part of it. Because every time, like I say, when I go to a sweat, you know, it really helps me. And I think this is part of that spirituality that was taken away from us, you know, that belief in the land itself, or, you know, our Kalkupi, you know, our creator. Because if you look at our spirituality, you know, some of it, you know, it's similar to any other religion. You know, our Kalkupi, you know, is our creator.
Mm-hmm.
Every religion has a god, and every religion has a Jesus, you know, a son of God. And in our culture is Sinhokloch, the coyote. He's the son of God,
mm.
Maybe, but, you know, it's similar.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of similarities in religion, but yet, why did they want to take it away from us? You know, that's a hard part to understand, because their religion is more powerful than ours, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, they definitely believe that.
Yeah, maybe it was the heathenism. Because I had some people come up and ask me, were your people ever cannibals? Yeah. I said, oh, yeah. Every time you walk by, I look at your hindquarters and I start drooling, getting hungry. But cannibalism, I've never heard of any cannibalism. They talk about cannibals in our Chiptaquala, you know, people who eat. So that's probably another story. I'm trying to figure that one out, because there's a lot of Chiptaquala that talks about different things. And we seem to like the coyote Chiptaquala because it's more funny and it's more entertaining. But I've never heard anybody else talking about our water monsters, our cannibals, all the different Chiptaquala. So,
are there any Chiptaquala about healing, like ways?
Because well, there is. All of them are.
So they're all teaching stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anything about, because the healing aspect, I think, is like it must be embedded in the culture, right? Everything is about, everything that's taught is about being, you know, your best self, right? So it would be, healing would be embedded in all of those stories, right?
Of course, you know, when you think about it, you know, and, you know, like the Cha-Cha story, everybody likes that one. You know, it's about the bird, the chickadee going around saying, looking for his sister. Cha-Cha, Cha-Cha. Because he was mean to his sister, and she left. So he has to go around looking for his cha-cha all the time. That's why you hear that bird going, cha-cha, cha-cha. Because it's part of life. Mm-hmm. If you're mean to your little sister, well, you're going to spend your, if she goes away somewhere and don't come back, you got to go around looking for her.
Yeah, you got to find it and fix it, right?
Hmm?
You got to find it and fix the problem, like whatever he has to make up for.
Apparently never, because he's still looking. Because if you listen to a sparrow, you'll kind of hear him, cha-cha, cha-cha.
Right, right.
That's cha-cha.
Yeah.
So he's spending his lifetime looking for her. See, that was one of the lessons, you know, and of family unit. So there's many others. I didn't get too much into the plants, and like I said, I spent all my life, and there's still a lot that I don't know. You know, they talk about the four corners in the pit house, and there's got to be a lesson to that one too. Because, you know, when you, one faces the east, the other part, because there's a story to every four sides, because our magic number is four. When the Innu came to visit us, and we had a pit house, and we brought them down, I was talking with them. And apparently they do have pit houses too in Japan. But they have eight pillars in theirs, and we have four. So they have their own story on the eight. But our four is a mystery to me, because I know there's a story around it, just like the Japanese have with their pit houses. Mm-hmm. So, see, that spirituality part was taken away from us too, because there's a lot of gaps that I don't know anything about. It'd probably take a lifetime to try to learn them all, but, you know, trying to dig deep enough. But we had no written history.
Exactly, nothing written down, only oral tradition, which means that the separation of children from their families for over 100 years means that that oral tradition wasn't passed down.
And you look at James Tate and all those that were one of the first writers of our culture. Mm-hmm. They didn't dabble into the spirituality because they didn't want us to remember it, maybe, I don't know. But so they touched a little bit on it, but...
Yeah, it was really only what they could observe.
Yeah.
And they didn't understand. They just observed.
Well, they were the superior race then. We were still heathens back in the day.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to get into some... You know, some more difficult topic because remembrance is a it's really sad. It's hard to face. There's been a lot of loss and a lot of pain and trauma in the Sohetmek culture for many, many decades, and things like just people leaving, people going to spirit because of disease. Introduced disease because of suicide, because of alcoholism. Mm. There's been so much early death that it's really hard to talk about. I understand that. So I would be okay if you don't want to address this, but I'm interested to know if you're willing to talk about it, about how we remember the people who've passed. How do we honor their existence, their contributions, their persons, like their personalities. How is that honored in the Sohetmek culture?
I have trouble with that one because I think in our culture, once they've gone to the spirit world, they're forgotten. And I think it's a memory as a whole. Like with the smallpox epidemics, we don't think of it as individually. You know, we lost a certain person, but everything was all encompassed as one. Because my grandmother never talked about her husband. So I know very little about him. Same with my other grandparent. And... I think it's maybe an individual thing, you know, or it's part of that, the way of our people, I think. It's looking at, I think, with how it affects you personally. And I think most of the time we're taught not to show pain or any kind of pain, you know, it's really hard to explain. Because, you know, there's a lot of things I don't know about my family that go back through the generation. And so it's really difficult for me to explain it. And I think it's, once they're gone, I think that you just remember the good things about them. It'll come up, I think, personally to yourself. You know, like I lost my son and my daughter. And I think accepting that they've gone maybe to a better place. And because according to our old people, you know, if suicide or unnatural death, the spirit has to wander the world to make reparation, you know, to be able to go to the spirit world. And because they could take the shape of an animal or plant or anything, but their spirit is out there trying to get to the spirit world. That's when I would say they see a deer or bear or something running around the yard or some animal. She said, oh, it's the spirit of so-and-so that passed away maybe. Leave them alone because they're trying to get back to the spirit world. So I think that's part of the spirituality, you know, to make penance according to the churches now, to be able to go. And so it's really one of the most difficult, because our people never talked about it too much, and they never talked about the people who passed away. Once in a while, a little thing would remind them of some part of the, just like me, I think of my little girl and my little boy, and, you know, periodically, you know, and it's still, the plane is still there. But that's like the ankle I was talking about, you know, we learn to endure. And I think this is what life and death is all about to our people. That's what I gather anyway, but, you know, nobody talks about it. And it's a... I think it's a conversation that is really difficult for a lot of people, you know. According to my mother, with her interviews with her mom, I guess when the women would all get together, they start talking about somebody who passed away, you know, somebody they really liked. They said one person would start crying, and pretty soon all of them will start crying, you know. And I think it's a part of that release of that, some of the pain that they felt. So crying is a really part of it. And they talked about, you know, if you're mad, you're really mad or something, you go out there, you get to lay on the ground and start beating on Mother Earth, getting mad at, apparently she can take the pain of your fists or whatever. But apparently, once you got rid of that anger or whatever you're feeling, the loss or whatever, you know, and that's part of the, I think that may be part of the spirituality we talk about, you know, and because we got to vent, get rid of that anger. Like me, I go to a sweat to get rid of the anger that I feel sometimes, you know, and I think this is all part of it, you know, that giving back to Mother Earth what was taken. So maybe that is a spirituality that maybe our people had. I can't really tell you for sure, because it was taken away from us.
So you don't know of any rituals or any, like, there's no practices necessarily to acknowledge somebody who's passed. Like, what? So I'm sorry that this is a really, yeah, I'm curious about kind of morbid things, but when somebody passes, like, what are the practices that happen right after?
Yeah. You usually, I don't know, that's really a part I've never thought about, because I think it was maybe too morbid for me, or... But, you know, it's something that I think... I don't even know if they gave away all their stuff, but I know nowadays they burn all the clothing and all the personal possessions, usually, like clothing and different things. And so it's a part that kind of like a mystery. We take different practice. I think our people are searching for it now, maybe, the spirituality. Because I hear now that their sun dancing was popular there for a while. You know, the back east, kind of like a religion. And I think that our people are borrowing. I think sun dancing is okay. But my guest said, oh, it's not part of our culture. And they mentioned that to her. But, you know, maybe our people are looking for their spirituality. And what I'm hoping is that they take all the good stuff out of it and leave the bad stuff out of it. Maybe we'll come up with some kind of a native spirituality, maybe. I couldn't tell you, but I think we need something to believe in, you know. Otherwise, you know, life wouldn't be worth living.
So I've heard of the fire that has lit after somebody passes, and somebody has to attend the fire. Is that a Sahuatmic practice where there's a fire keeper and...
Yeah, I think we talked about this before, you know, fire keeper is... I think that became part of the spirituality, because I think I talked about it before, when a real fire keeper is the one that looks after the fire. Because back in the day, we didn't have lighters or matches. So fire was really difficult to make once it went out. You know, and I think they used flint or rubbing stick on a little piece of wood to get it, mm-hmm. to get a spark going. So fire was really a difficult thing, especially when they had to move or anything. So they designated a fire keeper. And he kept the fire going. Even if they had to move, he had to transport the fire to the next campsite. Because remember, during the summer months, they moved a lot. During the winter months, you know, there's no problem keeping a fire going. But during the summer months, it was the moving. So they had a assigned person as firekeeper. Then I think in our spirituality, whenever they had a death in the family, the firekeeper would go there and build the fire or keep the fire going. And it was a beacon, because remember I talked about the spirit of the person who passed away is wandering the earth to make reparations, to atone and go to the spirit world. And that fire was like a beacon, calling the spirit back when they're ready to bury them or whatever. So that was the firekeeper. Now we just, because we don't need to travel anymore, we got lighters and matches now, so there's no problem starting another fire. So like I said, a long time ago, it was part of somebody's responsibility of keeping the fire going.
But do the family still do that? Still light the beacon when someone passes?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a given right now. So every funeral, they got a fire going, and it's calling the spirit to get ready for the final burial. Even that's another one too. I've heard some talk, the old people, if somebody passed away, apparently the old people went out and got enough birch bark to make a kind of like a coffin. A great big basket, enough to hold a body, and it was put in a fetal position. The same way you were born, so they're sending you back the same way you were born. So it was returning you back to the other life, the spirit world, in the same position that you came in. But that, I've never heard of that being verified, you know, because very little archaeological work is done on our people. In the interior. So there's a big gap, another gap there that we don't really know for sure. But it kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Cremation is another one. Our people never cremated. The only ones that were cremated were the warriors when they're out on the war trail and they got killed. So they were cremated, and the ashes were brought back to the main band wherever they were residing in. So that's the only thing I know about cremation with our people.
But everybody would have been buried. People who passed would have been buried then.
As far as I know, you know, and that's part of the spirituality. I think that was taken away from us too. You know, that full understanding as to.
So the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation really is all about remembrance. It's about remembering the victims of the residential schools.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a day that has been, like, now we're in year 5, I think, that that we've been recognizing that. So that is a day that must be very hard for a lot of Indigenous communities, because the remembrance is a practice. It's a cultural practice. And so if traditional remembrance in Sahuatmic culture is different than remembrance in settler culture, like, how does that feel to have that one day set aside per year that our job is to reflect and remember?
Remember when I talked about the women would start talking about somebody who passed away? And I think that's the same with kind of like Remembrance Day, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation. I think it's maybe part of the healing that we're going through. Because you can remember, too, there's another Remembrance Day, and that was November 11th. All our people went overseas to fight in somebody else's war. Because they felt, I think, they were protecting their land. Because mm-hmm. that's the only time our people, I understand it, went out and fought, was to protect whatever little land they had that they were looking after. So, to me, I think it's remembering, like, the residential school, the smallpox epidemic, the TB, the you name it, that was introduced to our people. And it's remembering, I think, of all the ones who passed away, not only at residential schools, but remembering all our ancestors who passed away to keep our cycle of life going. And I think that's what it's all about, you know, that maybe that moment of venting, getting rid of some of the pain, remembering that we have to get on with life, that we have a legacy of kids that we have, and making a better life for them now.
Mm-hmm. And so when, like, I know that when the Truth and Reconciliation Report came out, that was 2015, and that was Senator Murray Sinclair's commission that collected all of the stories of residential school survivors. Mm-hmm. And those are stories that have been shared and told for years before, like for decades. And yet no one was really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there was a disbelief that the abuse could be so severe, but it just wasn't really in the public, you know, understanding. And then in 2021, the 215 were found at Kamloops Residential School. And since then, a number of sites where unmarked graves have been identified. And so finally there was some kind of science that's backing up the stories of mm-hmm. of the survivors saying that they witnessed children being buried in these places. So once the 215 were found, it feels like it brought a whole lot of that understanding out into the world, like really out into the whole world, like people all mm-hmm. over the world were talking about it. So that feels like the sort of the main the tipping point of understanding that loss and mm-hmm. and the profound illness and death and abuse that had happened. So now recognizing that and remembering those children must be a very heavy responsibility for you now. It's a different kind of remembering because it's been talked about and those stories have been there for so long, but it's just all of a sudden now we all recognize it. We see it.
Yeah. Isn't there a lot of similarities with the so-called Holocaust and during the World Wars with the Jewish people?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. You know, there's still a lot of deniers. And I think there might be still a lot of deniers out here with the residential school. But, you know, reality says, well, they found the bodies. Because, you know, before, when it was first brought up, everybody kind of denied it, turned away and didn't want to accept it because, you know, it didn't really happen. And slowly, when the bodies came up, that's when, you know, it really brought it out into the open. You know, I think that it's similar to the Jewish Holocaust. You know, people denied it because, you know, our people will never do that. You know, we're good people, you know. Maybe individually we're good people, but when you get a... I don't know, it's really hard to explain now, but, you know, because we never do anything bad. It's the other people that do the bad things.
Right.
It's never me, you know, because we don't accept the responsibility of doing something bad. You know, I've done a lot of bad things in my lifetime. I try to deny it, but I know that deep down I know I did it. So people know they might not have done it themselves specifically, but maybe that's why they're denying it, because maybe they think they have a hand in it. So what goes around comes around, that the old saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a funny thing, you know. Human nature is funny sometimes.
Oh yeah, we do, and that's one of the problems with racism. Addressing racism is that everybody thinks that I can't be a racist because I'm a good person.
Yeah.
But really, we are all racist.
Yeah. Well, if you turn another way and not look at it, you are guilty of not really accepting it. You know, the responsibility of racism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you really think about it. Well, I think we're all racist, I think, and it's I think part of life, maybe. I don't know. Maybe one day we'll all get along. And in my lifetime, I don't think I'll see it. If it'll happen in the next 30 years, because I promised my kids another 30 years of putting up with me. So.
Well, that's good to know. So I'm still kind of curious about the role that other sort of cultural practices play in healing. And we talked about at the beginning how healing is not just in a medical way, but like healing the family unit, mm-hmm. and healing the language and healing, you know, other cultural practices and other ways of being. So are there any other ways like that you see healing practice, like rituals coming back into use that might heal the family unit or heal the language?
I think the only way we can do it now is talk about it and look for ways of improving our lifestyle. Because, you know, they talked about self-governance, traditional governance. But we can't do it because we've lost so much of our culture that we can't do it. We can look back at some of the good things, maybe incorporate it, you know, in our governance and our spirituality. Find the good things that happened with our people a long time ago and kind of incorporate it in our different way of life, because, you know, I don't think it's really gone myself, because look at me with the language. I couldn't even speak it 10, 15 years ago. Somewhere it's embedded in our memory, and remembering the good things, I think, is what life's all about. And because, you know, when you really think about it, we all try to do good. At least we like to think we are. And I think that's the only way we could do it is talk about it and start incorporating good things. Because that's what our Chiptakula teaches us. You know, our Chiptakula teaches how to live a decent life. Maybe that's the only way we could do it is keep telling our story, and just like our people did for hundreds of years. Remember the Slachaya, telling the true story. And I think that's what life is all about. Keep talking about the good things in life. Maybe we'll start teaching each other how to be good to one another. Who knows?
That is where true healing will happen.
Yeah, worldwide maybe.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. You've always talked about us getting to know each other.
Yeah, that's the only way you can have truth and reconciliation, is getting to know one another. And I think that's why I go out and talk about our people all the time, you know, is getting people to understand who we are. Because, you know, we're humans too.
Your mom was such an amazing, brilliant ethnobotanist. Do you think your mom was really interested in healing in that way, like using plants and things from the land to promote healing. Was that something that she was really passionate about?
It's that the healing comes with talking to people, trying to maybe help them heal too, to understand who we are as Wakmuk people. Because that seems like what the Creator is telling me to do. Because I always tell people I go where the Creator sends me. And I think that was the same way with my mother too, because we talked a lot about, you know, our culture, you know, the good things, the bad things. And I think it's trying to get people to understand who we are as Wakmuk people. And I think that's where the healing is all about, you know, getting people to understand us, so getting to know each other. Then I think the healing will begin.
That is a nice way to end our conversation today. Thank you, Louis. This has been enlightening, and I hope that the healing continues.
Yes, Potatua. I said, maybe I'll go now.
Cook's gem, Louis.